Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is United States against Salem. Mr. Handelsman.
May it please the court, Robert Handelsman, Ken Carlson, for the defendants. There's one overriding legal principle we are trying to convey to you on this appeal. And that is a defendant at the bottom of the conspiratorial pyramid, like Ionescu, Salem, and Studley, cannot assist or agree to promote another without doing something together with the other, working together, collaborating together, in tandem with that other. Merely doing what another does doesn't count. That is not a joint undertaking. The citations in the reply brief show that a joint undertaking by itself does not make one liable for the entire conspiracy. And there is a huge difference between responsibility for relevant conduct and furthering the goals of the conspiracy. The goals of the conspiracy are not necessarily the same as a joint undertaking. In Studley, the defendant's conduct furthered the conspiracy, but that by itself did not make him responsible for any other co-conspirator. Before Studley, Ionescu, or Salem can be responsible for the acts or conduct of another co-conspirator, each must do something to assist or agree to promote those acts and that conduct.
Well, see, I mean, I guess that's what I won't say confuse me, but I thought we needed to talk about, because if you look at our prior opinion in this case and if you look at the sentencing guidelines, it's certainly true that you need to define what is the jointly undertaken activity. That's what we thought hadn't been done properly. And then you need to see what act a particular defendant did to further that activity. But it wasn't person-specific. I mean, your rule would work a very large change, I think, in the law of conspiracy and joint undertakings to have to trace person by person what each individual did to help another. I'm not aware of anywhere that has been said to be the law.
I think you have to look at the circumstances of the conspiracy. If you have, say, a bank robbery conspiracy, two or three people go out and rob, say, four banks together. There it's no problem. But when you have a large conspiracy like this, and defendant A may help defendant B do two things, but defendant B is totally responsible for, say, 100 things.
Well, but let me just back up. Suppose you have this conspiracy, and some people in Romania are involved with a group in Chicago who are helping to effect eBay frauds. The people in Chicago know that they are involved in the Chicago branch, if you will, of the eBay fraud scheme. Now, if the Romanians also had a Boston group or they also had a San Francisco group, I have no problem seeing that the Chicago people are not responsible for the Boston or the San Francisco if their jointly undertaken activity was limited to Chicago. But I don't see why, if they had an eBay scheme that each person has to know, I mean, down to which currency exchange they go to, what their role is.
First, I think you have to look at the circumstances of what happened in Chicago. One defendant may have had a very small part to play in that conspiracy, in the Chicago part of the conspiracy. He shouldn't be responsible for everything everybody did there in Chicago. That was, I think, the problem we had below, because we had to pull from the initial brief. It's on page 10 of the initial brief, where the district judge seemed to equate furthering the goals of the conspiracy with the joint undertaking. That's the point we're trying to drive at here.
But you seem to think it's impossible that they are the same. We thought it was a fact question whether they were the same. it might have been smaller, it might have been all the way out to the limits of the Chicago-based conspiracy, and the district court finds as a fact on remand that they all are out of the Chicago area conspiracy, and there's evidence that he points to. You know, Mr. Salem, for example, shares information about which currency exchanges to go to. These are good ones. These are bad ones. He shares false IDs. He does all sorts of things.
Well, who did he tell about the other currency exchanges? Was it one other defendant in Chicago or all of them?
It was a co-conspirator who shares. You know, that's what a conspiracy is, that there's this group benefit. If that's within the scope of the activity undertaken, that accountability is there.
Well, that was I picked to disagree, because being a Pinkerton theory of liability is not the same as a joint undertaking under 1B1.3. That was the whole point of Studley. If that was the law, Studley's sentence would have been affirmed, because he's basically in the same position. He's working with the others, doing what the others did, and the Second Circuit said that's not enough. And we take the effect of the Studley opinion, and we couple that with the language from this circuit of assist to agree to promote. That I think gives you the guideline. Did he assist this conspirator? Did he help him out in any way? If there's six conspirators in Chicago, and say Salem or Ginescu is only helping out one?
But there are factual findings here. I mean, the Second Circuit Studley decision is resting on a factual finding that the defendant's involvement didn't extend beyond his own sales effort. There's a different factual finding here.
But I think we covered that in argument two of the briefs.
Okay.
Where he talked about the sufficiency of the evidence. The evidence has to reach a certain minimal standard before you can go from a question of law to clearly erroneous. And it's our position the evidence didn't meet that floor here, because the evidence proffered by the government was they all got bailed out by the same lawyer. They shared false IDs. They went to some parties together. We're not disputing that they knew each other or that the conduct was foreseeable. But as I mentioned regarding Ginescu in the initial brief, I think it was, he was liable for everything Constantine did. Constantine was, I think, in the middle of the pyramid. Now, if Constantine did 1,000 things, hypothetically, to further the conspiracy, and Ginescu only helped him with one or two, Under the way 1B1.3 is written, should Ginescu be responsible for all those 1,000 or just one or two? Granted,
but we know that they were reasonably foreseeable, because that was established.
But that's a separate question from whether they jointly undertook some acts together or some conduct together. I see I only have a few minutes left, so I hope I answered your questions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Handelsman. Mr. Hayes.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. The district court correctly applied 1B1.3 on remand and committed no clear error in finding that Ginescu and Salem agreed to a joint undertaking with the co-schemers that he identified that embraced the full scope of the scheme in the Chicago area, the receipt of fraud proceeds from victims and transmittal of fraud proceeds back to Romania in order to keep the scheme going. This was a fact-based finding in which the agreement was inferred, and there were not minimal facts. There were quite a few facts. The similarity in modus operandi, Judge Dara cited, knowledge of the scope of the scheme, which there are numerous cases pointing out what an important factor it is. It's not enough on its own. That is a factor to be considered. The evidence of coordination amongst the co-schemers and the length and degree of Ginescu and Salem's participation in the scheme.
Don't disagree that people at the bottom of the pyramid might not be aware that they're signing on to a scheme as big as, for example, the Romanian, you know, masterminds had.
I would not disagree with that. And, in fact, in this case, there were limiting principles that did not lead someone at the bottom to be held responsible for everything that was going on. It was based upon the facts.
And what were those limiting principles?
For example, the folks such as Gonescu and Salem were limited to acts in the Chicago area with the people that they were closely linked to by the facts, so that the court, by making that factual finding, limited their responsibility to those people who he could infer an agreement to participate jointly in that activity with. These people in Romania, as the court observed, were probably working with people in other geographic areas. Salem and Gonescu were not held accountable for that sort of conduct. They were held accountable for those people here in the Chicago area who the facts showed they were working closely with, and which the court felt those facts were sufficient to infer an agreement to undertake this criminal activity jointly in the Chicago area.
So there's a different list of names that we ask the district court to consider for each of these two people. Salem, it was a longer list. Gonescu, it was just Ion, Constantine, Bladea, and Matula, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And based upon the facts, the court correctly found that as to Salem, there were a larger number of co-schemers who he could be held accountable for at sentencing. And with Gonescu, it was a shorter number. And so once again, I think this demonstrates that the court was applying the facts so that it's not a finding that you have knowledge, therefore you have to be held accountable for the whole conspiracy. It's a factual finding based upon what these facts could lead the court to conclude was the scope of the agreement here in the Chicago area.
Did you mention Simon when you were talking about Gonescu? It seems to me that we indicated that was
a name. Simone. She was part of that as well, and that was actually conceded at the first go-around, so that wasn't really an issue on the remand.
All right.
So if you have no further questions, I will conclude. Thank you.
Counsel, anything further, Mr. Handelsman?
Yes, thank you. The government mentioned similarity of the MO and coordination. These are people at the bottom. They do what they're told. I think in the application 02, there's an example of a wheel conspiracy with the spokes. Under the government's interpretation, each spoke would be responsible for the other because there's a similarity of MO and some coordination. We submit that considering the assistant agreed to promote language and Studley, you have to go further and look at what each did when they're at the bottom. And we mentioned in a footnote, the higher up you go in the hierarchy, the easier it is to prove a joint undertaking. But we're dealing right here with people at the bottom. Now, I conceded liability for Simon the first time around because that was Genescu's wife. He certainly knew what she was doing, and he allowed her to do it. Matula, he brought into the conspiracy. So there's no problem there. Bladea, we said under certain circumstances there can be liability. He gave Bladea a phone. Well, he's responsible for whatever Bladea did with the phone. But if Bladea did 6 acts with the phone and 20 acts without it, how can there be a joint undertaking for all the 20? This is the point we're trying to make here. And when you're dealing with people at the bottom of the conspiracy, it requires a more detailed analysis if we're going to be true to the assist or agree to promote language. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Handelsman. And Mr. Handelsman, we appreciate your willingness and that of Mr. Carlson to accept the appointments in this case and your assistance to the court as well as your client.
Thank you. Always look forward to appearing here.
The case is taken under advisement.